everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Tonight, we have a really exciting show. Our guest is Jim Mars. He's a well-known author and researcher, and we're going to be talking about his latest book, Psi Spies, which is all about remote viewing used by our own government, believe it or not. Very, very exciting subject, and I can't wait to talk about it. Jim Mars is actually a native of Fort Worth, Texas. He earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in journalism from the University of North Texas and attended graduate school at Texas Tech. He has worked for several Texas newspapers, including the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, where beginning in 1968, he served as a police reporter and general assignments reporter, covering stories locally in Europe and the Middle East. Since 1976, Mars has taught a course on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy at the University of Texas at Arlington, which later led to his 1989 book, Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, which was published to critical acclaim and actually reached the New York Times paperback nonfiction bestseller list. It was became a basis for the very popular Oliver Stone film, JFK. Then, in May 1987, Mars approached the UFO subject, writing about it in his book, Alien Agenda, published by HarperCollins. And this book actually became one of the best-selling UFO books of all times, translated into several different languages. And in early 2000, Mars wrote another book, Rule by Secrecy, which traced the hidden history that connects modern secret societies to ancient mysteries, which also reached the New York Times bestseller list. And in 2006, the terror conspiracy probed the conspiracies of the 9/11 attacks and their aftermath. An award-winning journalist, Mars has won several writing and photography awards, including the Aviation Aerospace Writers Association National Writing Award and the Newsmaker of the Year Award from the Fort Worth chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. He has appeared on numerous television programs, radio programs, and you name it. Mars is really a very high-profile figure, and we're very, very lucky and honored to have him on the show. Jim, thank you so much for coming onto the show. I'm really excited.
Well, Preston, I'm just delighted to be with you and your audience.
Your book is truly amazing. I mean, I've read it cover to cover and really enjoyed it. I think it's explosive. I just really couldn't believe the stuff I was reading, and I'm actually pretty knowledgeable about this subject. I've read Joseph McMonagall's book and Courtney Brown's book and several of the others, but I really had no idea how far-reaching this subject goes into
our
government.
The potential of it is absolutely incredible. In fact, when I stumbled across this story in the early 90s, immediately my ears perked up, because as a journalist, I said, wait a minute, you know, this is either real or it's not, you know, and if it's not, then I've got a great story here about a waste of taxpayer money. But if it is, wow, that means this could be an evolutionary leap for humankind.
All right, well, I have to give you kudos for actually even investigating the subject at all. And I find it fascinating, your journey of how it came to you. I mean, initially, growing up, were you skeptical of psychics?
Oh, absolutely. I was brought up in the Southern Baptist Church, you know, and that psychic stuff, that was, at best, it was phony and the providence of con men, and at worst, it's of the devil.
Right.
So, when I first heard about this, I was highly, highly skeptical. But as I continued to work in it and delve into it, and particularly as I began to research and realized that this psychic ability, number one, was found to be within each of us by the scientific testing done at Stanford Research Institute. In fact, the whole study of remote viewing has been called one of the most severely monitored scientific experiments in history, and it builds on a long history of the work of the J.B. Ryan and his wife. And then you begin to trace it back, and you go all the way back to the Bible, and you find that prophets were venerated, and that there was even an Israelite prophetess named Deborah in the Old Testament who came to the leader of the Israelite forces, and as they were about to go into battle against a force twice their size, and she said, you know, I've had visions, and I can tell you the disposition of the enemy troops, and she did, and this knowledge, this military intelligence, allowed the Israelites to defeat this much larger army. So, you know, right there, I think we have one of the first military remote viewers.
Right, it does go way, way back, and that's what I loved about your book, is how you trace this phenomenon going all the way back to biblical times. And like that one prophecy, a great empire will fall.
Right, and it did. The problem was it was his.
Right.
See, but then again, that's a very good illustration there, that when you do get some of these psychic signals, or when you do learn some of this material through remote viewing, you have to be cautious with it, you know, and this is what the U.S. Army did when they created their own unit of psychic spies, or psi-spies, as I call them. They never quite took them seriously. They never just took that raw information that they gleaned from remote viewing and then really acted on it. They used it as an adjunct and as an addition to other sources of intelligence, and which actually is probably a pretty smart thing to do.
Right. That just blows my mind, because, I mean, how many times do they have to be hit over the head with the proof that this is actually working?
Well, every time they had that a new administrator came in, or they had to deal with a new congressperson or another general, you know, for funding, every time they had to go back through the same thing again, testing, to be able to prove to them that they actually were doing something more than just writing reports. What I found especially interesting was what they finally devised to get their funding continued was that they would bring a congressman or a military officer in, and they would have him do some remote viewing himself. And then they go, holy cow, this really works. So they get their funding.
So there's a lot of people at very high levels who know this is true, and they're just not talking about it.
That's true, and the reason they're not talking about it is because, you know, in government, knowledge is power. And if you know something and everybody else doesn't know it, that gives you an edge. So you can imagine that they don't want an informed, knowledgeable public out here that realizes through remote viewing that they can have access to every secret the government has.
Well, they
definitely want to downplay this and try to dismiss this and act like there's nothing really going on there. But, Preston, before we get much further, maybe I better just explain what remote viewing is, because there's probably some of your audience that may not have ever heard of it.
Right, like remote viewing, is that like an out-of-body experience, or what's the difference? I mean, explain what it is.
Okay. Well, actually, remote viewing is not the process. It's the methodology for controlling and calling up the process. I've got hay fever. The actual psychic phenomenon used to be known as clairvoyance. It's the ability to perceive people, places, things at a great distance other than with the normal five senses. In other words, a psychic ability. We all have this to one degree or another. I'm sure many of your audience probably has had the experience of thinking, you know, I think my mom's going to call. And then just in a few minutes the phone rings, and you know it's her, and it is.
Right.
This is a very natural human thing we have. As we all know, the human brain is divided into right and left hemispheres. The right hemisphere is very psychic, very creative, very in touch with the universe, if you will. But the left hemisphere, left brain, is not. It's not all psychic, and it's because it deals with body functions and day-to-day cognizant thinking. So what remote viewing is techniques that were developed to allow the not-at-all psychic left hemisphere of the brain to communicate with the very psychic right hemisphere of the brain. If you simply follow the protocols and the methodology, everyone has the ability to use this.
Right. It seems like our society is largely left-brained and analytical and sort of...
Right. Well, we've been pushed that way because, again, Well, as John D. Rockefeller, who founded the National Education Association, once said, he said, I want a nation of workers. I don't want a nation of thinkers. So we've been conditioned into that.
Right, right. It's unfortunate. It's great because I think your book is really going to turn a few heads.
Well, yes, I should think so. There's so many fascinating things in there. I'll tell you another reason why I think that the government is trying to dismiss and marginalize any discussion of and knowledge of the fact that the U.S. government, for under four administrations and for a number of years, to millions of dollars, funded this remote viewing program. And that's simply for the fact that one of the biggest secrets that is still being kept from the public today is the reality of UFOs. And every single one of the government-trained remote viewers at one time or another had direct knowledge of the UFOs. Now, I'll hasten to add that from what I know from interviewing all of these SciSpies, they were never officially tasked to go look at UFOs. And I think that makes sense because how can the government explain that they're having their highly trained, highly paid remote viewers go out and look for something that for 50 years they've told us doesn't exist?
Right.
But what happened, Preston, is that when they would be tasked to go on other errands, for example, let's say that they were told to go cast their mind out and look around in the upper atmosphere for high-flying, high-performance aircraft, of course, the object being to see if there was something the Soviets or the Chinese or somebody might be testing. Well, they go up there and look around, and they see these objects flying through the sky. And as one remote viewer told me, he said, but those weren't the Russians, and he said, they weren't us either. In fact, they weren't from our neighborhood.
Oh, no. Wow. I find it fascinating. There's so many examples you have of these psychic spies who go and discover some top-secret type of information and then are able to verify it to the people who are keeping this information. But these people who are keeping the information refuse to act because they're kind of, you know, between a rock and a hard place. If they admit
right.
that the psychics are telling
yeah,
the truth.
Yeah, they don't want to admit where the information came from.
Right.
Or the one I like best was a military officer who kept getting information from the SciSpies, and it kept turning up to be valid. And finally, he was very impressed, and he finally kept saying, well, where is this information coming from? And they didn't really want to tell him. I guess they knew his mindset. And finally, they broke down. They said, okay, this is coming from the psychic remote viewing. And he just blew his top and said, get out of my office. I don't ever want to hear about this again. He said, I'm not going to believe in this even if you can prove it to me.
Oh,
how's that for an open mind?
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, that just goes to show the kind of minds we're dealing with. And
that's
that
true. In fact, that was generally the mindset when the whole thing got started. There actually had been dabbling around with psychic abilities going back probably even before World War II, but when it really got started was about 1970 with the publication of a book called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain.
Yes, I've read it.
Yes, very excellent book. And I do, too. In fact, when I first heard about that and ran home, I looked, sure enough, I had a copy in my bookshelf. But the military men in the Pentagon and intelligence chiefs and at CIA, their attitude was, well, we don't believe in this stuff, but by golly, if the commies are looking into this, we have to, too. And so we had kind of, I guess you could say, a psychic race along with the arms race. Because of the Cold War.
Right, wow.
And what's really incredible is actually we, according to what I know, apparently we were more successful than even the Soviets, and I think the reason was because of this, which is really kind of intriguing. They had a very closed authoritarian society, and so they went out and tried to locate natural psychics, and they'd just go out and grab them, you know, take them off the street.
Right.
You know, old ladies, young kids, put them in the laboratory, and they say, now do it. You know, well, that's not really conducive to the best psychic functioning.
Right. And apparently, I mean, according to your research, they tried some pretty brutal methods.
That's right. And, of course, you know, that's like, you run up somebody and grab them and start choking them and say, quick, tell me a funny joke. You know, they can't think of one.
Right, well, using electroshock and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, on the other hand, over here, since they weren't able to just go out and grab anybody they wanted to, they were forced to develop techniques that allowed an average person or a very bright military person or whatever to hone their psychic skills and develop techniques that allowed them to call this phenomena up on demand and utilize it to its best potential. And we actually, I think, ended up doing better than our erstwhile enemies.
All right. Well, like Ingo Swann, he was one of the early players in this whole
right.
ordeal.
Right.
And I mean, like the story in your book with the I don't know how to put this, the telepathic gerbil.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, really amusing and just so eye opening.
Well, you know, anybody who is very close to their pet has probably had this same example to your audience. What Preston is talking about is Ingo Swann had a it wasn't a gerbil. What was it? It was a
A chinchilla.
A chinchilla.
That's right.
Thank you. Had a mental block there. But and he realized that the chinchilla could anticipate his thoughts and moves. Anyone that has a really smart dog probably has had the experience of you're sitting in your chair and you think, well, I think I'm going to go take a walk. And the next thing you know, the dog's at the door, you know, wagging his tail and panting. He's ready to go.
Right. Well, they did a study. They found that dogs actually can anticipate when their owners are coming home and they'll be waiting at the door.
Right.
Things like this. So
that got Ingo Swann to thinking, well, you know, how does this work? And, you know, there's no verbal communication or visual communication with the animal. They're obviously, they're picking up the thoughts or the brain waves, the magnetic energy that actually, you know, motivates and powers our bodies.
So
we are at heart electrical beings. We know that there is a electromagnetic energy field that surrounds each individual. And interestingly enough, they have now done scientific studies to show that when a person dies, that energy field does not dissipate, okay? It just moves up and off and goes somewhere else.
Is that right?
So that's really fascinating.
Well, I've heard that when a person dies, they actually lose like an ounce of weight as well.
That's the energy, apparently.
So
I didn't know energy weighed anything, but apparently it does.
Right, right. Fascinating. So how did this all go from, you know, just individuals to the government actually conducting studies and putting groups together and doing psychic spying?
Well, when they got into this psychic race with the old Soviet Union, the program was initiated by the Central Intelligence Agency. They began to fund studies out at Stanford Research Institute in California, and they just did these unremitting tests, just test, until they were finally convinced that there really was something to this psychic ability that they began to call remote viewing. But then about the mid-70s, the CIA got in a little bit of trouble because of allegations of drug running and political assassinations around the world, meddling in other governments. And so they did a little bit of house cleaning, and they decided they wanted to divest themselves of any programs that might cause them a problem. And since there were then and still are people who would be very skeptical, if not just outright antagonistic towards any program dealing with psychic ability,
right,
they decided they would chunk that one. Well, the U.S. Army was standing in the wings, and they said, we'll take it. And they then continued the testing and then ultimately created a unit that went under several code names, Grill Flame, Stargate, Center Lane, Sun Streak, and it was a very highly classified program that employed about 25 people. And many of these were their remote viewers. And they would actually be tasked to go out, look for enemy submarines, look for enemy nuclear weapons, look for biological weapons facilities, you know, snoop around. As I point out in my book, Psi Spies, which you can learn more about that at my website, jimmarrs.com, J-I-M-M-A-R-R-S.com. Dave Morehouse, for example, would actually cast his mind into the Kremlin and would prowl the halls of the Kremlin.
Wow.
And I remember him telling me that he came around a corner at one point in the Kremlin, and there was an armed guard standing there, and he just about had a cow. He's going, oh, my God, he's going to see me, and, oh, what am I going to do? He went into his fighting stance or whatever, and then he realized that he was not there physically. He was there mentally, and the guard couldn't see him, and he just went right on past the guard and right through a closed and locked door. Now, this sounds absolutely fantastic. Sounds like science fiction, but I'm telling you, this is what our government was doing for several years.
Oh, I have no doubt that it's true. I mean, I've personally had several out-of-body experiences, so
you understand.
Right. I know what it feels like to be out of your body and be suddenly convinced that you're actually there in a different environment.
Right. They came up with the term bilocation for that. That's when your body's one place, but your full consciousness and mind is at another. In fact, one of the things that fascinated me was Mel Riley, who was one of the earliest and best of the sci-spies, told me of the time that he was tasked to go back to a battlefield during the Middle Ages. And he said he got there, and the experience was so intense that he bilocated. He felt like he was really there, and he said he couldn't even concentrate because he was too busy dodging flying arrows and battle axes, and he could smell the horse's sweat and the blood and hear the clashing and clanging of swords and shields and everything else. And I said, well, Mel, tell me, I said, what do you think would happen if one of those battle axes had crashed right into your head, you know? Would your physical body have died? And he looked at me with a funny look on his face, and he said, we don't know.
Well, so is this an out-of-body experience or some form of
it?
Yes,
it's an out-of-body experience, basically. Yes.
Okay.
Because your consciousness is somewhere else other than your body. I would say it's basically the same thing. Of course, that leads us into how does all this work and how do we explain all this? And that's where they have a problem, and that's why you don't hear more from the scientific community regarding remote viewing, because it basically violates the scientific methodology, which is you start with a thesis or a theory, here's how something works, and then you see if it works, and if you can duplicate it over and over again, then you can say, yes, this works, and it becomes a law or it becomes an accepted theory. But in remote viewing, they can demonstrate that the phenomena works, but they really don't know how. And as one debunker said, well, if you can't say how it works, then it must not be working. Again, a pretty closed-minded view of it. But that's the problem. Now, my personal opinion after studying this whole thing for so many years is that I think Einstein was correct when he spoke of a universal or unified field theory, a universal energy grid. In other words, the entire universe is one big ball of energy. And everything that we know or can see or can measure, stars, planets, people, tables, chairs, everything is made up of the basic units of this energy field. So it's all connected.
Right, so it's like the theory of non-locality and space,
yes,
and time is an illusion.
Exactly.
Wow.
Okay, but our consciousness, you know, like time, for example, would be like all the grooves on one of the old 33-and-a-half phonograph records, but our consciousness is a phonograph needle. So right wherever we are in one particular groove, that's all we are able to sense.
Right, so
but everything else is out there, always has been, always will be.
Huh. So then
and the only thing that changes and moves around is just the phonograph needle, our particularly here and now perception.
Right, so that would make time sort of a trick of perception then, and
right,
raising above.
Yeah, time's kind of it's an artificial construction that we devised in our brains just to keep everything from happening at once.
See, this is amazing. And, you know, when I first heard about remote viewing, I got together some of my friends and family and I'm like, let's try it, you know, and so we wrote down a bunch of targets and we tried it, and I was amazed that several of us had really good hits. I remember my best hit, we were all trying to read this target, and I was just not getting much of anything except rocks and dust and space and nothing there. And we opened up the envelope, and it was the moon. I'm like, wow, you know, wow.
So your consciousness had gone to the moon.
Right, right.
Right. Now, for an example, because let's try to do it. Let me do a little example here to share with your audience about how this works. If I ask you, Preston, to remote view the Eiffel Tower, you could immediately get a very clear picture in your mind of the Eiffel Tower because you've seen pictures of it or you may have been there before.
Right, I see it clearly.
But that's not remote viewing. That's a mental picture, mental image, or daydreaming or something like that. So one of the problems in remote viewing is how do I prevent you from getting those normal mental pictures if I wanted you to, say, go and remote view the Eiffel Tower? So what they came up with was what they call coordinate numbers, and they only call it this because early on they actually used longitude and latitude coordinates, but after a while they dropped that, and now they just call them coordinate numbers, and they really have no meaning except to whoever connects, sets the task,
right,
assigns the remote viewing. And then, so if I want you to remote view the Eiffel Tower without front-loading you, as they say, with pictures of the Eiffel Tower, then I'd say, Preston, I want you to remote view 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Right.
Okay?
Brilliant.
Now, you've got a number there. Your mind then, if you do the proper methodology, if you go into the meditative state, the relaxed state, you allow your right hemisphere of your brain to go out and hit the universal energy grid, then you pick up on that number, picks up on the signal, thought from my head, and you actually go mentally, and you begin to perceive input, and then you begin to record all that, and then you begin to self-interrogate yourself, and you go, first, for instance, you say, is this a person, place, or thing? And you say, well, it's a thing. No, it's a place. Okay, it's a place. And is it tall or short? You know, is it hard or soft? And you just keep going that way until you find, is it in North America? No. Is it in Europe? Yes. It is in a major city? Yes. Are there lots of people around it? Yes. You know, is it metal? Yes. And you just keep going in that respect until those soft psychic signals provide you with enough information that you begin to realize that you're thinking of the Eiffel Tower.
Right. Well, that's what's so fascinating about this process is, I think, as you wrote, in one of the major stumbling blocks apparently is our own brains, our left brains doing analysis, analytical overlay, I believe you call it.
Exactly. In fact, that's where I got in trouble the very first time I tried to remote view. I was supposed to go out to Albuquerque to the headquarters of a certain company. And so I thought, well, I'm going to sit down and just remote view and see what that headquarters looks like. Well, I got a pretty clear picture in my mind of a single-story strip shopping center-like office building, but there was something that jutted out from the corners, and so my analytic overlay got in the way, and I said, oh, well, I'm going to Albuquerque. That must be that southwestern architecture where they have wooden poles coming out of the tops of some of the buildings, you know.
Right.
And but then I went on to sketch a floor plan of the building, right down to writing large conference room where I saw there was a conference room and reception area and front door. Well, I went out to Albuquerque and found out that this company was operating out of a man's ranch-style house. So I said, well, I guess I'm not any good at remote viewing. But more than a year later, I went back out there, and they handed me back my drawings with a sticky note that said, good job. Okay?
Wow.
Because it seems that in the intervening year, they'd had some success with training, so they had leased some office space at a strip shopping center office place, and it was the same neutral tones that I'd seen in my remote viewing, but at the top of and at the, each corner there was something jutting out, but it was not wooden poles, it was lion's heads, decorative lion's heads. And then they gave me the official floor plan of this office building, and my drawing of the floor plan matched it 100%. So that was really kind of a shocker to me, because what I had done was remote view an office building that had not yet been built. So in other words, I had remote viewed into the future.
Traveling through time.
Traveling through time.
Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Jim Mars. He has written a fascinating book called Psi Spies, that's P-S-I, Spies, The True Story of America's Psychic Warfare Program, which has just been released by New Page Books. And you said you had a website where people can go to read more about this?
That's correct. That's jimmars.com. You can read all kinds of things. That's jimmars.com. And I post stories on a wide variety of topics, but the only commonality being that it's probably stories you won't find prominent in the corporate control mass media.
Oh, and your book is just brilliantly written with all the anecdotes. And, I mean, it's at once funny and amusing and kind of scary at points, too. And
well, it is kind of scary because, you know, right now there's so many people upset about this intrusive government surveillance, you know, putting up video cameras and microphones everywhere. And, you know, and I can't help but kind of laugh a bit because if they're concerned about that, how concerned would they be if they found out that with remote viewing, they can come right into your bedroom and you know, there's no hiding place.
Right,
you can be 100 feet underground in a sealed vault, and they can still come look at you.
Right. People have no idea. I mean, privacy apparently is a complete illusion.
That's true. But now let me hasten to add here, because I don't want people to start freaking out. Is it possible for them to come and look at you any time of day or night? Yes. But are they? That's the big question. And probably not, because to do it properly would require multiple viewers, okay, doing multiple sessions over a period of time, which translates into time and money. And so the question is, are they going to spend that kind of money and tie up a bunch of remote viewers just to go out and look at one individual? And the answer is basically probably not, unless they have some reason to really want to target that particular individual.
Right. Well, it's very interesting, I mean, because another thing that you brought up is when someone learns this ability and they start doing remote viewing, and they're given a task to, say, remote view a crashed sub or something, they find themselves out of body soaring through space, and they instantly become distracted
by
the many other things that they can do. I've experienced this myself.
Right.
So
that's Mel Riley once told me, he said, when you can go out and see the wonders of the universe, you know, you tend to lose interest in that Soviet submarine.
Right, pretty darn quick. I mean, this must have just completely transformed people's lives.
It did. Everyone who stuck with it, and keep in mind that early on there were many people who got into the Sci-Spy program and then for various reasons just dropped out. They couldn't handle it. It went against their religious beliefs. It just aced their mind. I mean, you know, it was more than they wanted to deal with, so they got out. But the ones who stayed, and that's another thing that tells me that this is all very real, is that almost all of the people who were there at the end of the program when it was ended in 1995 officially have all stayed with it. They're either teaching or speaking on remote viewing or continuing to work with outfits that are doing remote viewing work. So that shows you that this wasn't, they weren't doing this just for a paycheck. Now they're doing it because they know this is real and it's important.
Right. Well, it's still a very controversial subject. I remember, I think it was Ed Dames who came to speak for a local MUFON group here in Los Angeles, which I attended, and I could not believe how many people showed up. It was more than twice the crowd I've ever seen. There was a lot of, you know, government-suited type people there.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Dames was saying stuff that was, some of it was very interesting, but some of it was just so off and so bizarre, and it kind of made the whole subject look a little ridiculous.
Well, I think you're onto it there. I don't want to get into personalities here, but there are certain people who I don't think ever left the government's payroll, and their whole mission out there is to confound, confuse, and to in some ways discredit remote viewing.
Well, it worked, because it turned me off the subject when he said that Travis Walton had been held as a slave for aliens during his five missing days on Mars and blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
Well, keep in mind that it was Ed Ames who said, see, the problem there is he gets this publicity because they just continually put him on that national radio program. And he's always saying this stuff that just gets lots of attention, and everybody goes, holy cow. And then it turns out not to be true. If you'll recall, he's the one who said that there was a body coming behind the Hale-Bopp comet.
I do remember.
And then it had full of pathogens, and they were going to spread all over the world. And everybody was going to be, in the world, was going to be dead within 6 months. And, you know, and if you don't believe me, send me $59.95 and I'll send you a tape or something, you know. So I don't know. You have to be cautious with remote viewing, just like you would anything else.
Well, if you're doing this, how do you know that you're getting accurate information? Only by, I guess, what you call feedback is probably the best
right.
method.
Feedback is key. That's what Ingo Swann said. If you don't get feedback, you can't even really say that remote viewing has taken place. In other words, if you and I are talking, and I tell you, Preston, there's a little pink fluffy poodle dog, a toy, in the back seat of your car. Okay? All right, big deal. Now, if you go out to your car and you look in the back seat and there's a little pink poodle toy, then that's feedback, and
right.
you know that something very real just happened. But, you know, and that's what makes it so hard for what they call esoteric targets, like people, you say you went to the moon, other people have gone to Mars, other people have gone to the moons of Jupiter, and they come back and report all in some detail about what all's there, but until somebody actually goes there, you know, we will not have the feedback. So the only way we know that those esoteric targets are probably close to being truthful is simply by the viewer, him or herself. If their track record is good, if they have a very high accuracy rating, and on many, many, many sessions where there can be feedback, they've proven to be correct, then you can tend to take them at their word when they give you some target that there's really no feedback on.
Well, yeah, like the moons for Jupiter, I guess several people have gone there and come back with very similar impressions, including of actual smells.
Right, exactly. And see, this is exciting to me because I was brought up at a time when NASA and Apollo missions and going to the moon and science, that was the big deal. And now, you know, it kind of chased me that we're not extending our space program any more than we are. And of course, the reason we're given was just too costly. Of course, we can spend $1 billion a week fighting over in some country that never did anything to us, but we can't seem to come up with money to explore space. But if it is a question of money, then obviously the solution would be to use remote viewing.
Right.
send our mental astronauts out there. They could, and they wouldn't be confined to this solar system. They could go anywhere and then report back on what they find. But, of course, that would increase our knowledge, which is not really what our leaders want.
Right. Well, remote viewing does apparently have some limitations as well, like what you wrote about the lottery. People aren't successful.
Yeah, well, Limbi Cannon was the training officer for the remote viewing unit, and he always laughed. He said people are always coming up to him and saying, oh, I hear you're a remote viewer. Quick, give me the winning lottery number, you know. And he says, I don't know what's wrong with them. If I could get the winning lottery number, I certainly wouldn't be giving it to them.
Right.
I'd be winning all that money. But this brings up a very, very interesting point about remote viewing. Remote viewing is this soft psychic signal that is produced and is felt and recognized when you're doing remote viewing. It's very subtle, and it's an awareness. It's a feeling. It's not a concrete picture, okay? And when you start talking about numbers, and that's what you'd need to win the lottery are these numbers, you realize that numbers are an artificial construct of humans. In other words, if you're holding an apple in one hand and an apple in the other hand, that's the reality.
Right.
But we say, for the sake of brevity and communication, I have two apples. What I'm getting at?
Yeah, numbers are completely abstract.
Numbers are abstract, and as a result, remote viewing, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to actually come up with numbers. I remember one of the remote, one of the SASPIs told me about remote viewing into the past, and they went and looked around, and they were on a public street, and they went to a newsstand, and they looked at a newspaper, and they could see what the headlines were saying, but they tried to look at the date, and it just didn't come. They couldn't get the date.
Well, you know, I've had some out-of-body experiences where I tried to read, and I just can't do it.
Right.
And I've tried it several times as well, and the numbers will spin, or just weird things happen where it just...
Yeah, it's just kind of like it gets blurry or something.
Right.
But have you been able to read words, or do you have trouble with words, too?
Words are also very difficult. Not as difficult, I would say, as numbers, but
right.
Reading of any kind I find very, very hard.
Hmm.
And it's just bizarre, and I guess that's true. I mean, Robert Monroe, he said as much.
Right.
So
yeah, exactly.
Now,
that was one of my big regrets in researching remote viewing, is that I had a few telephone conversations with Bob Monroe, and then I was all set up to go and travel up there to the Monroe Institute and sit down and interview him, and he passed away.
Wow.
So
tragic.
I missed that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, because he's a major shaker and mover in this field.
Exactly. And, by the way, I think I mentioned that in my book, SASPIs, that most of the early, certainly the early SASPIs, would go through the Monroe Institute before they started their actual remote viewing operations.
Wow. See, another thing I found very fascinating was the idea of psychic shields and psychic protection and how that sort of failed and was easily bypassed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's worth relating to your audience. That was pretty smart. They had tasked one of the SASPIs to go look at some secret documents or whatever of the Soviets, and the Soviets apparently had put up some like a psychic block there or something. They had people that were, constructing mentally a defensive perimeter around all these documents and everything. So in the session, the remote viewer says, well, I can't get to him. You know, there's a shield there. And so after a while, his monitor said, well, if that shield wasn't there, what would you see? and he started telling everything that was there. So they found out that they could get past the artificial shielding, mental shielding.
Well, I mean, the abilities of, there's just so much potential with this. It's mind-boggling.
Absolutely. That's why they don't want everybody to know about it. That's why my book originally was suppressed. See, this was information that I put together back in the 90s, and it was all set to be published by a major New York publisher. And at the last minute, even though it had passed the legal vetting, they had advance orders. They were all set to go to the printer, and then it just got shut down, which unfortunately shows us the very, very tight control that corporations and government has over our media.
Right. It's chilling. It really is. But the book is out, and, God.
Now it's out. Now you can read it for yourself.
And it's amazing, because you present all the major players in there, Lynn Buchanan and David Morehouse and all of these guys, Courtney Brown.
Right.
One of the famous, or one of the really interesting remote viewing sessions that you wrote about was when Lynn Buchanan actually put himself in front of a particle beam.
Oh, wasn't that amazing? Yeah, that was something Lynn never told me back in the 90s. That's a recent addition. That's another thing. This is an updated and expanded version of what I wrote some years ago, and with some incredible stuff in it, and including the story about how Lynn Buchanan was tasked to try to identify and figure out how a Russian particle beam disintegrator ray worked. And so he ended up sticking his hand in it, and he was able to pull his hand out. And of course, this is not physically. He's doing this mentally. And so he pulls his hand out, and he felt like he was okay. So he actually stepped into this particle accelerator, this disintegrator beam, if you will. And I think that what happened to him gives us some clue as to who we really are, because he didn't disintegrate. What happened was he saw 1,000,000,000 little particles of himself spread off down this beam, and each little particle was aware. Self-aware. It was they knew itself, but all of them also knew that they were part of the whole. And so when he stepped back out of the beam, then he reintegrated and was back into his astral form, I guess you'd call it.
Boy, I mean, what a fascinating stuff. It really is. It's like, you know, it reminds me, I've had some out-of-body experiences where I approach telephone wires. For years, I would always avoid them, but I finally figured, well, I'm not physical. It's not going to hurt me. I'll just fly through it. And I did, and a couple of times I did feel like a burst of light, or there was a kind of a buzz. Mm-hmm. Other times there was nothing. So apparently you can't get hurt when you're...
No. Our science tells us that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only change form. And as long as you're holding your form, then, you know, I guess you can't be hurt.
Well, it does affect the physical body at times when you're doing this, because one guy, as you described in your book, he was remote viewing an installation, and it was located in Russia, and it was very, very cold, and apparently goosebumps were forming on his physical body
right.
as he's out there in this very cold environment, which he's feeling, you know. So there is obviously some sort of connection there. I'm wondering...
Well, of course there is. I'm very close to my body.
Right.
But we don't really know how firm that connection is, and we don't know that if that connection is broken... Do we continue to exist as self-aware beings? My belief is we do.
Right. Well, apparently you do transform somehow when you do this, because, I mean, you also described how some people do remote viewing and it doesn't work for, like, peeping Toms, because a lot of the emotions of lust get pushed to the back. And
the guy that wants to go spy on his pretty... female neighbor in the shower, yeah, he can go look and he can realize that there's a person, it's a female, they're taking a shower, you know, and he can get all those impressions, but he is not going to get that Playboy centerfold fold out that he's looking for.
Right.
It's not that kind of phenomenon.
All right, well, again, I think once you start having success with this, all your priorities change real quick. And you find, well, you know, now that I can go anywhere, why do I want to start exploring, you know, military weapons when I can go to the moon,
for example? Well, and that, of course, that's a problem that the U.S. government had all along, not only with remote viewing, but back into the MK-Ultra mind control experiments and drug experiments when they were handing out LSD to everybody and all like that. And they found that, you know, once you're free your mind to go out and become aware of a lot of things going on other than just your mundane three-dimensional material existence, that you tend to lose interest in military matters and state secrets and all this garbage.
Yeah. Well, is remote viewing dangerous then in any way other than, like, say, having a government involvement and their interest in you and harassment, perhaps?
I hesitate to say no, because there may be some individuals who are borderline schizophrenic, borderline psychotic, who may have some baggage to begin with, and remote viewing may actually excavate those problems. So I would say be careful, but as far as a normal, balanced person, I don't think that remote viewing is going to actually harm them in any way. In fact, I think it would help them grow in knowledge and experience and wisdom about what life's really all about, what the universe is all about. But I would say that advise that if you decide you want to get into remote viewing, I would read my books, I Spies, or any number of good books. As you mentioned, Joe McMonagle has several good books out like that. Contact Lynn Buchanan. Contact the people who know what they're talking about and have actually worked in the government-structured remote viewing program, and take their advice on who to engage as a teacher, what type of courses to take. And that's another thing, too. This is not something that you just sit down and do immediately. This is something that's kind of like learning to play the piano. You have to study, and then you have to practice. And it's basically a lot of work, as you probably know, Preston.
Right. Well, that brings me to my next question, is what is the basic steps for someone who wants to try to do this? I mean, I know you can't tell us exactly.
Well, yeah, I'm just a journalist. I'm telling you all about it. I can't. But, get on the Internet, okay? Get on the Internet, look up remote viewing, and you're going to find more sites than you know what to do with. Again, I would go to the people who were actually engaged in the government-structured remote viewing. Again, Lynn Buchanan, Paul Smith, Courtney Brown, he wasn't with the government, but he was he trained along the same lines. And go to people who were with the unit, and even then, you know, get a second opinion.
Right.
Talk to one and then talk to another one until you can decide for yourself which one seems to suit your style and your outlook and gains your trust the best, and then see if you can take some lessons with them.
All right. Well, I hope a lot of good people are trying to do this, because it seems to me it does have the potential to be used wrongly and for evil.
Oh, yeah. I'm afraid it, you know, it's like anything else. If you can use something, you can use it for good, you can use it for bad. What I'd like to see done, Preston, is for them there to be a acknowledged remote viewing central organization, okay, that would test people and accredit them for being good remote viewers. Right now, anybody can say they're a remote viewer. But have people who are tested, qualified, certified, and then set up a panel of the very best. And then when the president comes on TV and says, okay, we've got to go invade another country because there's weapons of mass destruction over there, you know, we can turn to these remote viewers and say, well, now, tell us what's really going on.
Well, one of my favorite articles that was ever published in Fate magazine involved a task given by the editors to all the readers to actually remote view Area 51.
I remember that.
And, oh, I was just surprised at the similarity of the stories and just the
some of them, I think, were actually there. Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, some of them, I think, actually, they actually were looking around in there. I'm sure that didn't go over real big. Secret keepers.
Right. So is our government still doing these things?
Well, if you ask a government spokesman, are there any remote viewing units, you know, within the military or within the government, they're going to tell you no. And to the best of my knowledge, technically, they're telling you the truth. But what they're not telling you is that after the Army's remote viewing unit was disbanded, the veterans, the remote viewers, the SASPIs, most of them went into private practice or teaching or whatever, and they all have a coterie of students now, and the government can subcontract to them and have them, we want to know about this. Then these former SASPIs conduct viewings via their students and then write up a report and pass it back to the government. And that way it's plausible and deniable. The government can say, no, we don't have any remote viewers within the government, which is technically true. I also understand that there are individual remote viewers that are embedded in various organizations, such as the Navy SEALs or the Army Rangers. And, of course, you can see, Preston, that that would only make sense, because what military commander would not want to have somebody at hand who just might possibly could tell him what's over the next hill?
Well, I mean, there are so many mysteries on Earth right now that could be solved using this. I mean, like, just recently, was it that millionaire Steve Fawcett? Was that his name? Got lost in the desert?
Oh, yeah, Bob Fawcett, yeah.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they still haven't found him, have
right.
They?
Just put on a remote viewer.
But there you go. In fact, I guarantee you, there's no question in my mind, if you got three or four or five really good remote viewers together and went through the proper protocols, they would find out where he is.
Well, Jim, you know what? We're at the end of our hour. We have about 1 minute left.
Goes quick.
Your book, Five Spies, is truly amazing. I think it's a groundbreaking book. I hope everyone goes straight out and buys it. I really, really enjoyed it, and it really enlightened me quite a bit. Is there any last message you want to give to our listeners?
Well, just understand that we are energy beings and that we have a lot more potential than we are led to believe we have, and we need to start trusting ourselves instead of putting our trust in the corporate media or in political leaders or religious leaders who in the past have been shown to be so deficient.
Right. I agree. Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you, Preston.
Very, very interesting. Well, everyone, that's our show tonight. Our guest has been Jim Mars. We've been talking about his latest book, Psi Spies, The True Story of America's Psychic Warfare Program. That's PSI, Spies, and truly an amazing book. I definitely can recommend it, and I think it will have the potential, actually, to change your life. So definitely check it out. I hope you can all join us next week when our guest is Michelle Moravetti, and she's going to be talking about transformational insights for our mind, body, and soul. Until then, I hope you've enjoyed the show, and have a great evening.